Hey, hi, hello, listeners. I'm glad you're with me this wonderful Tuesday morning. This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I hope you all had a nice long weekend and are full of energy for the upcoming week. I'm your host, Double M, and you're listening to my weekly show, Do's and Don'ts. So, since the spring break is almost here and we all love to travel, I decided to dedicate my first topic to traveling. Every culture has its own specifics that can be little known or even weird to foreigners. And in order to avoid awkward situations and misunderstandings, you should prepare and do your homework before organizing a trip to another country. I did my research on France, Italy, and United Kingdom, and in my first segment of today, I'm going to share the cultural do's and don'ts with these countries. Since we've just survived Valentine's Day and France is the country of love, I'm going to start from here. First of all of us should, before going to any other country, even if it's not too far from your country, learn some of the basic phrases such as please, thank you, goodbye, hello, sorry, and so on. It will always be appreciated and considered as politeness and thoughtfulness. French people are known for their good taste in clothing. They're stylish and pretty much always look good, even if they're going to a kiosk around the corner. So you might want to dress well yourself. Of course, you can still wear any ethnic attire if necessary. Most people in France will stare at you in the rural areas, but they're not going to be offended. France is really expensive. If you go to France, be prepared to feel that nerve before checking your bank card balance after your trip. You're going to pay for everything, even using the toilets in the bar will cost you. Tipping is important too, including hairdressers, taxi drivers, chambermaids, and even train and airport porters for on a per bag basis. Table rules. Those are probably slightly different in every country, and sometimes it's not enough to chew with your mouth closed. While in front of the table in France, always place your napkin on your lap immediately after being seated. If you're a fast food restaurant, you still must use eating utensils. And I would recommend to practice that ahead of time because it might be difficult to eat a burger with a fork and a knife. Don't eat on the street ever. It is considered as being homeless and being unsophisticated and even rude. Another interesting thing is that you're also not supposed to bite from a whole piece of bread. Instead, tear your bread into bite-sized pieces and then eat it. And I guess for this you can use your hands, so. Be careful while addressing people. As in many other languages, do not address someone to, which is you in French, when you are supposed to use vous, which is you in a plural way. It would be considered disrespectful to mix these two. And same as in German language, if you know it might be easier to understand. Do not try to impress others with your wealth. Instead of discussing that you bought a new Ferrari or a new Porsche, talk about culture, food, vacation, politics, or family. If you're somebody's guest in French, instead of wine, bring a good book or a CD or anything art-related as a gift because French people love art and they will always appreciate it. If you're bringing flowers, do not choose red carnations, as this flower is considered to present bad will in France. In cafes, do not expect ice when you order a drink, as they won't have it. They never serve ice with drinks, even water, because it's considered unhygienic. Also, never complain about how long it takes to order for the French. They take their sweet time. do shake hands upon meeting someone and as well before saying goodbye. French handshakes, however, are not as firm as American handshakes. And French people always appreciate maintained eye contact, for it represents attention. And I think this applies to every culture pretty much. So these are the basic guidelines for France. And now let's move on to UK, which is a more complicated case. So you think the British are a nation of stiff upper-lipped tea drinkers who wear bowler hats and play cricket? Well, Britain and its people also have changed over time, but politeness still remains a prerequisite. If you decide to visit this country, the first do is to do bother reading this do's and don'ts section. So the first of this would be, don't confuse England with Britain or English with British. You'll be considered ignorant and even offensive. English people are from the country of England, and British people are the ones who live in Great Britain, which includes Scotland, Wales, and England. The United Kingdom or UK incorporates Northern Ireland. People from Scotland and Wales are outraged at being called English because they don't live in England, and they also have their own parliaments. So this would be the same as if you, Californian, would be called a Canadian. You would get offended. Don't forget your table manners. The British generally pay a lot of attention to good table manners. As usually, you hold your knife in your right hand and your fork in your left. When you've finished your meal, your fork and knife should be placed side by side at 12 o'clock, and guests should wait until everyone at the table has been served before they start eating. Don't be intrusive. British people need their privacy and their space. Questions like, how much money do you earn, or how much do you weigh, or why aren't you married, or why are you single, may be considered rude or even offensive. They're just too private to British people. Don't talk badly about their queen because they love her. You shouldn't criticize the monarchy. However, it is fair game to criticize politicians. Do mind your P's and Q's. That's an expression used in Britain to mean mind your manners. So do say excuse me, please, and thank you a lot. Do say sorry just as often. Average British people will apologize often even over things over which they have no control. This is considered simple politeness, even though for you it might seem rude, weird. Don't talk too openly about success, as in France it is not accepted and it is considered bad taste. Overstatement is always bad in Britain. And you're not going to impress anyone by telling them that you just bought a new villa on a seaside coast. Instead of that, you should complain that it's not cheap, that you have a lot of work in the garden, and so on. That way they will respect you. So a really weird thing about Britain is that do pop in when invited phrase is like, that's the thing in Britain. Drop in anytime and see you soon are idioms often meant to be taken literally, not as in US or other countries in Europe. Call someone before stopping by their home or work. It is considered a nice gesture writing a thank you email or calling someone after having visited them. And if you're going to someone's house for dinner, take a bottle of wine or some flowers. Do buy rounds. When at the pub, you will be expected to participate in the British tradition of round buying. One person buys the first round of drinks for the rest of the group, and then when those drinks are almost finished, it's the next person's turn. Buying your own drink and not offering to buy a round is considered rude. Always expect a queue. Queuing is a vital part of British society. Whether you're in a shop or at the bus stop, you will always see a straight, orderly queue. This doesn't make the bus leave any quicker, of course, but at least those who arrive first can get in first, and that's nothing but fair. Pushing in, it's frowned upon. Even the suspicion of a queue jumper will make people nervous and edgy, and some of them will even unconsciously move closer together to defend their place in line, so don't do that. Do watch where you're walking. Literally, the British are experts in landscaping and gardening. They take great pride in their pristine lawns and flower arrangements, so much so that the country even boasts its own lawnmower museum. Before walking across the grass, make sure there is no sign prohibiting you from doing so, prompting an angry "Do not walk on the grass" sign. So this is enough for UK and Britain, and let's move on to Italy. every visitor falls in love with Italy because of its warm welcome, variety of landscapes, regional cuisines, and its art and music, which are amazing. So before going to Italy, one should learn about coffee, for coffee is not just a beverage for Italians, it follows precise rituals. It is common to have a quick breakfast of cappuccino and a croissant or a cafe espresso with colleagues at mid-morning. In both cases, coffee is drunk at a bar and no longer than 5 minutes. I couldn't imagine finishing my coffee in 5 minutes. That would be ruining it for me personally, but Italians apparently do that. So cappuccino is drunk only in the morning and far from the main meal. Accompanying with lunch or dinner is recognizable as a sign of being foreign. Italians normally end their meals with coffee, not accompany it with coffee. A strong aromatic coffee of not more than 25 centiliters in volume. So in Italy, do let the conversation flow. Whether sitting in a meeting or at a dinner table, Italians used to be really loud. Several people usually speak at once and interrupt each other. And this is a normal way of communication, of interacting both in professional and social contexts, and not a sign of rudeness. So scream as much as you want in Italy. Italians can be very critical of their country, but might not accept criticism from foreigners about the political system, religion, mafia, or topics related to negative Italian stereotypes, as World War II and off-color jokes. Art, food, wine, family, movies, music, fashion, design, and traveling are always good topics of conversation in any country you go to. Do mind nonverbal communication. Italians are masters of it. Shaking hands is the most common way of greeting acquaintances in Italy, but it is considered quite formal for family members and friends who used to give a quick kiss on the cheek to one another. Physical contact, such as touching the arm or shoulder, is a normal way of communication and it shows empathy. Italians like to be close contact with people, and to keep distance from that can be understood as a sign of unfriendliness or that you don't want to communicate and talk to them. So try to be as close as possible and don't push them away. And one of the best tips for me personally before going to Italy was drive carefully. Pedestrians not always cross the street at the zebra crossing. Bikes might pass on the right-hand side. So while exploring the city, it is better to use public transit. At least that is what I would recommend you. And this is it for my traveling section. Traveling is a wonderful thing, but it's also expensive. Plane tickets, hotels, rental cars, guided tours, excursions, and souvenirs are price entertainment, and you want to make sure that you can afford it. I'm going to talk about money saving in my next segment after the break. Meet you then.
I'm an American.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host, Double M, and you're listening to Do's and Don'ts, my weekly show. In my last segment, I discussed do's and don'ts of traveling to a different country. It is always useful to get to know about the countries you're traveling to, culture, and what is considered politeness and what is considered as rudeness. But primarily, before planning a trip, one should do the most terrifying thing in the world: check their bank account. I don't know how about you guys, but every time I'm about to do that, my knees start shaking. It is amazing how fast all the Starbucks coffees and gas expenses add up to a price of a brand new dress from Macy's. So after my last check, I understood that it's time for a change and started looking up ways to easily save money. Surprisingly, this actually worked better than the everyday plan to start tomorrow. So I'm going to share some of these advices with you guys. So firstly, make sure you clear your debts before you have any. And if you do, well, it's better to clear them before you start saving, because if you have some savings and you have to give them all up for your debt cleaning, it should be heartbreaking. So yeah, firstly, clean your debts. Secondly, do set saving goals. This will be an easy method because you'll know that in the end, it'll pay off and you're gonna get your reward. This will serve as practice for the future, and hopefully one day it's gonna become a habit even without having a goal. All you have to do is to know the price of the thing you're looking forward of getting, and in proportion to it and the time until when you are willing to get the thing, set aside some money every day. For example, if you're willing to buy a dress that costs $35 and the event in which you want to wear this dress is in a week, set aside $5 each day, and in 7 days you are going to be able to afford it. That's an easy way. But in order to do that, you might have to cut down on your daily habits, such as your morning cappuccino, which might be a little hard, but as long as you stay motivated, it's going to be manageable. I believe in that. So use the same method with long-term expensive goals, such as buying a car or an apartment in the city. Figure out how much you'll have to save per week, per month, or per paycheck to attain each of your saving goals. Take each thing you want to save for and figure out how much you'll need to start saving now. For most saving goals, it is best to save the same amount for every month or every week or every paycheck. So if you're willing to rent an apartment, let's say start saving $500 every month and don't cut down on it. Do keep a record of your expenses. I warn you, at first this is going to be terrifying, unpleasant. You're going to be shocked by how much money you spend on nothing practically, but it is a really effective way of controlling your expenses. What you save falls between two activities and their difference: how much you make and how much you spend. Since you have more control over how much you spend, it's always wise to take a critical look at your expenses. Write down everything you spend your money on for a couple of weeks or even a month, and be as detailed as possible. And try not to leave out even small purchases. Assign each purchase, even such as rent, car insurance, phone bills, car payments, cable bills, utilities, gas, food, entertainment, coffee, etc. So my advice to do that is to keep a small notebook with you at all times and develop a habit to mark everything that you buy, even if it's a pack of gum. And sit down once a week with your small notebook and receipts. Collect your receipts, by the way. That's a good way too, because you always see how much money you spend on anything. And there are also many apps that you can download in your phone to help you save money. So that might be a good way. I personally haven't tried it, but I'm looking forward to. And when I do, I promise I'm going to share that with you guys too. The second step after taking record of your expenses is, I bet you guessed, to trim them down. Take a good hard look at your spending records after a month or two have passed. You'll probably be surprised when you do. $30 on ice cream? $10 on parking tickets? How did that pile up? You likely see more obvious cuts you can make. Depending on how much you need to save, however, you may need to make some difficult decisions. Think about your priorities and make cuts that you could live with. calculate how much those cuts will save you per year, and that will serve as best motivation possible. For example, maybe you can move into a less expensive apartment or a house, or maybe you can refinance your mortgage. Can you save money for gas? Or if your family has more than one car, maybe you can bring it down to one. Can you get a better price of insurance? This is almost always possible. There are web pages that will tell which insurance is the cheapest one in your area. So check that out, call around, and make sure you have the cheapest and the best offer. Shop at the discount racks at the clothing stores. Items on clearance are marked down considerably and could even save you up to 50 or even more percent of price. So isn't that a great deal? Maybe you can live without cable or satellite TV. It shouldn't be as difficult because you can always watch various shows and movies on your computer and they don't even cost. Also, you could probably cut down your utility bills. Eating out adds up majorly. Believe me, every Chinese restaurant which looks so alluring, every Starbucks muffin, every donut adds up to your expenses. So it would be a better idea to go to a grocery store, buy some cheap foods, make them at your home. It would take you an hour at most, and then you would have healthy and cheap snacks with you all the time. Or you can just cook at home if you have the time for it instead of eating chips, which is hardly stopped to eat. Stop using credit cards. When you pay with a credit card, you never see how much money you have in it or how much money you spend. And when you have cash, as a matter, as a material, you can touch it and feel it, and your wallet gets thinner if you spend too much. So this is why I recommend you that. And if credit cards are completely necessary to you, I have a trick to offer you. Print out a picture of your future goal. Let's say you're willing to buy a really nice dress or an expensive Michael Kors bag or beautiful high heels, or if you're a guy, a new Audi or whatever. So just print that out and put it in your wallet. And whenever you open it, you're going to see that picture in front of your credit card section. And that will, believe me, that will keep you from using that. So if you're completely broke, you can also recycle old mobile phones, DVDs, CDs, and clothes. There are sites, many web pages, you can use to sell your old mobile phone. And this is going to be hard to spell, but I'm going to try. So it's Mazu Mobile. It's spelled MazuMaMobile.com. So this webpage will pay you up to $90 for a fully functional iPhone 4 or $30 for a faulty handset. Then there is this other webpage called Music Magpie or Music Magpie. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. So it's Music MAGPIE.co.uk. This webpage will give you money for your old CDs, DVDs, and even video games. And you can also consider selling your clothes on web pages such as eBay or so on. Buy own brand goods at the supermarket. They're usually even better than normal branded goods. For example, Tesco's Everyday Value baked beans in tomato sauce costs only 24 cents for 420 grams. So that's nothing, and they are good. I've tried those. Make your own gifts instead of buying stuff from the store. I bet you always have the same problem as I do when your friends happen to have birthdays every other week and you have to come up with some nice ideas how to make them happy. And my advice would be, make gifts at home. It will have your own touch, and this is a valuable thing, and it will probably be consumable. Because at home you can make mixed foods, candles, bread, cookies, soap, and all kinds of other things quite easily and inexpensively. And these are the things that the person you're giving to is going to consume. They're not going to pile up in his or her closet and just, you know, it's a way of saving space. And also you can add a nice gift card drawn by yourself or written by yourself. It's going to be a nice memory, believe me. Money is a time saver in general, nothing else, and we could save a lot of money if we wouldn't save time. Before going shopping, it's a good idea to make a list and stick to it. One should never go into a store without a strong idea of what one will be buying while in there. Make a careful plan of what you'll buy before you're going there. Then stick strictly to it and never put anything else to your bag if it's not on the list. That way you will save money and time too. This is a win-win. Master the 15 days rule. Whenever you're about to buy something and you think that it might be a necessary purchase, wait 15 days and ask yourself again if you still want that item. You can even make a list, but I'd rather just think about that, because sometimes if you don't need something, you just simply forget about it. And that's an easy answer. Instead of throwing out some of damaged clothing, repair it instead. Don't toss out a shirt because it has a broken button. Sew in a new one. It's going to take you a minute. And if you find a closely matched thread, it's not even going to show. And if you have old ripped jeans, you can use them in your apartment. It's not necessary to throw them out. And this way you will save on new sport pants or on new tights. Drink more water. Not only does drinking plenty of water have great health benefits, water drinking has financial benefits too. Drinking a big glass of water before each meal, and not only will digest it better, you won't eat as much. Saving on your food expenses will be much easier if you drink more water. And you will also find yourself probably feeling a bit better, because a lot of Americans are somewhat dehydrated. And light. Oh my God, this is my number one problem. Whenever I leave my apartment, I always keep the light on. So you guys should try not to do that, because this is going to be shocking. But if you spend 1 minute turning off lights before a 2-hour trip, that's the equivalent of earning $50 an hour. And that is some impressive savings, particularly if you do it before longer trips. So the key is to use less energy, particularly when you're not using the device. And the most important thing here is to not give up hope. I know sometimes it's going to be hard and you're going to want to buy something expensive and nice just to lift your mood, especially if you're a moody day. But the most important thing is to never give up hope, and I believe that you will succeed. So meet you after the break, when I'm going to talk about bad mood controllers, because I've noticed that many people were feeling sad lately and this is not okay. So have a nice break.
Do you remember when we met? Ooh, it was a day I knew you were my pet baby. I want to tell you, oh, how much I love you, yes I do. Come with me, my love, to the sea, my sea of love, baby. I want to tell you, oh, just how much I love you, yes I do. So come. Baby, I want to
Okay, welcome back after the break. This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I'm DJ Double M, and you're listening to my show Do's and Don'ts. In my last two segments, I've already talked about traveling, cultural specifics, and easy ways to save money, which can highly reflect on your mood in a bad way. Not getting your morning cappuccino for a week, that's some huge changes. No, seriously, lately I have noticed that a lot of people are either really pessimistic about everything that is possible to be pessimistic about, or even claim to be depressed. While they're not, I'm not talking about real depression. The problem here is that we need to recycle our shitty emotions just like we recycle our trash. I guarantee you that at least 50% of your problems aren't real problems. They're just annoying things that can be easily fixed, and if not, they're not worth your nerve. We have no control of some happenings in our lives, but we always do have control over our reactions to them. So I'm going to offer you some ways how to save your nerve cells and maybe reduce the count of your problems. So first of all, try to list what's bothering you and keeping you from being happy. I will give you an example. I'm hungry, today I slept and someone left. My alarm clock didn't went off on the right time and I had no time to put on makeup. I looked like shit. I have 30 papers until today's night. Oh my god, I'm broke as I spent all my money on some more makeup. I have work tomorrow morning. My crush didn't text me back for 5 minutes. And so on. So let me stop you right there. These aren't even real problems. They're made up. Stop complaining about something and do something about it. Change what is changeable and don't stress about what's not. For example, the fact that you woke up too late this morning. That's that. It's already happened and it's not going to change. And the next step to do is to try to make the best of it. Or just, you know, set your alarm clock at a louder tone or two of them for the next morning right now. So everyone has stuff to do. Some of them work 10 hours a day and study at night. Some of them don't understand anything they read because they study abroad, not in their own language, and therefore it takes them 5 minutes to translate and understand a material which is written in one simple page. So your responsibilities are not going to go away just if you complain. So the two solutions for this are either to make a change in your schedule and maybe drop something if you aren't capable of handling it, or just shut up and work and do everything you have to do, because nobody's going to do it for you and complaining is not going to help either. So don't let your real trouble result in more trouble. If you woke up late and you didn't have the time to put on makeup, let's say, you can bring it in your purse because you can put it on anywhere in any public bathroom. And if you forgot to do that, look at the bright side. You're giving your skin a rest and it's going to look even better tomorrow. Better than it would look today with makeup. Solve your problems. Don't pretend they're not there. Believe me, I've tried that and it never works, I can assure you. The only real problems probably are family related or the deaths of our relatives or loved ones. Those problems listed above weren't real problems and they're possible to easily get rid of and change them. So every time you think you have a problem or something that is annoying you, name it and list it. And if it still seems like a problem, think of ways you could solve it. Ask yourself questions such as, what would make it better? What would do a change? What would make me feel better? Is it the end of the world? Is it worth my sadness and my time that I spent thinking about it? Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that none of you have real problems. I'm just offering a good way to sort them out and maybe decrease their number. Try lifting your mood with fun activities or anything that would keep you busy and not analyzing your trouble, especially if it's love troubles. So, some of the mood lifters. Exercise may be as effective at revealing mild to moderate depression as the antidepressant Zoloft, reveals a study from Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. Physical activity stimulates the feel-good chemical dopamine, which increases our sense of well-being, explains Stefan Ilardi, PhD author of The Depression Cure. a little stressed out? Of all the things you can do to bring on calm, aerobic activity may be most effective. Studies show that workouts speed up production of new nerve cells in the hippocampus, which is the brain's memory processing center. So whenever you feel lonely or sad or depressed, try working out. It's going to make you look better. So every time you're looking at the mirror, your mood is going to probably lift because of your body changes. And also, it's going to increase dopamine in your brain. Who would have think that's real? I mean, this is a really great fact, and you should stick to it and take advantage of it. Ilardi also says the antioxidants, and flavonoids in colorful fruit and veggies work in combination with omega-3s to protect the brain from harmful inflammation that can trigger depression. So you should eat healthy foods such as fish, fruit, and vegetable in order to increase your mood. People who have insomnia have fivefold risk of developing depression compared with those who are well rested, according to a study of the University of North Texas in Denton. So sleep is really important to you, because lack of sleep has also been linked to weight gain. If you aren't getting 7 to 8 hours a night, you can seriously compromise your health and also put on pounds. Some studies suggest that regular meditation reduces the recurrence of depression as effectively as medication. If sitting and chanting aren't appealing enough, start with baby steps by focusing on your breath. If your mind wanders, let your thoughts get away and refocus on inhaling and exhaling. Aim to do this a couple of minutes every day or anytime you feel like your head is ready to explode. It helps. And so it is counting to 10, but that's an old method, so I didn't feel the need to share that with you guys. Sunlight is a key for regulating your biological clock, which affects mood, sleep, and energy. Depressed people exposed to bright light for an hour upon waking for 5 weeks experienced a 54% improvement in symptoms, found a study from Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. So be in sunlight as much as you can. Unless you're lucky enough and live in a location that enjoys year-round sunshine and mild temperatures, as California does, you're likely to experience a drop in your vitamin D levels during the winter. According to the UV Foundation, low vitamin D levels can lead you to fatigue, depression, and aches and even pains. And there aren't a whole lot of foods which naturally are rich in vitamin D, but you could choose eat fish, liver, oil, and sardines. Those are among the top providers. Research from University of Chicago suggests that having a close circle is critical. People who are lonely have increased levels of depression. A study from the American Journal of Health and Behavior reports that socializing with friends can have as positive an impact on health as quitting smoking, working out, or eating right. Curling up to on a couch with a pal can be a restorative too. A friendly touch puts the brakes on the brain's stress response signals, Ilardi explains. So go and give someone you love a hug if you feel sad and lonely and moody. And if your friends are trying to lose weight or just look better and, you know, be more muscular and thin, you should all go work out together. That would be a nice way of reducing depression. Also, you can cook together. You can Google foods that serve as depression reducers and do that for your free time instead of crying in front of a romantic old movie. And this is about it, about my move lifter section, and I'm going to see you guys after the break when I'm going to talk about a really relevant topic, which is job interviews. Meet you after the break. Every time I see you cry, every time I wonder why,
be my baby girl.
Welcome back, guys. This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, and you're listening to Do's and Don'ts with DJ Double M. Today, I've already discussed traveling, money, and how to save it, and ways to get rid of the depressing thoughts and depression itself. So my last topic of today is going to be more or less relevant to all of us. It's job interviews. When you're dressing for a job interview, the image you present might mean more than you expect. Your image is what makes the first impression on the interviewer. And that first impression is the one that sticks usually. So it's really important to dress appropriately when interviewing. Regardless of the type of your job you're interested in, you want that first impression would be the best one you can give. So when dressing for an interview for a professional position, dress accordingly in business attire. If you're applying for a job in a more casual environment like a store or a restaurant, it's still important to be neat, tidy, and well-groomed, and to present a positive image to the employer. So the first do is to do dress appropriately for the industry. Err on the side of being conservative to show you take the interview seriously. Your personal grooming and cleanness should be impeccable. No one wants a stinky coworker. So do know the exact time and location of your interview. Know how long it takes to get there, park, find a restroom to freshen up, etc. If you're not sure where you're going, bring directions and any instructions the hiring manager may have given to you. If you have an even confirmation of the appointment, bring that too. Many people just assume that they're going to hit the address to their GPS and it's going to lead them right to their destination, but it might not always be true. So make sure to bring this to bring directions. You should arrive early. In any case, it's always good to have time. It decreases stress, and being 10 minutes early shows that you're a really responsible person and that you take the interview seriously. So do that. Then three other people you encounter with courtesy and respect, because their opinion might be meaningful during the hiring process. Offer a firm handshake, make eye contact, be friendly and self-trusting and confident, because this is always a plus. Listen to be sure you understand your interviewer's name and the correct pronunciation. This is not something you want to mess up with, because even though it is a small thing, it may cost you a job offer. People get really offended if you mispronounce their names. Even when your interviewer gives you a first and last name, address him or her by title, such as Miss, Mr., or Doctor, and last name, until invited to do otherwise. It is just a thing of politeness and good manners. So while at the interview, always maintain good eye contact and sit still. Avoid fidgeting and slouching. It gives out that you're nervous, and, you know, even though everyone understands that you're supposed to be more or less nervous while in a job interview, still try to keep it as calm as you can. Respond to questions and back up your statements about yourself with specific examples whenever possible. This will give your interviewer a more clear way of understanding you as a person in your everyday life and in your job also. Ask for clarification if you don't understand a question. It's better to ask for it than to mess up after accidentally. I know it's embarrassing, but it's still a better way. Be throughout in your responses while being concise in your wording. Be honest and be yourself, your best professional self. Dishonesty gets discovered and it grounds for withdrawing job offers and for firing. You want a good match between yourself and your employer. If you get hired by acting like someone else than yourself, you and your employer you're just going to be disappointed and happy and grumpy all the time, because this is not what you expected and you're not the person who your employer hired. So just try being honest and being yourself. It's always the right way. Treat the interviewer seriously and as though you are truly interested in the employer and the opportunity presented. And exhibit a positive attitude. The interviewer is evaluating you as a potential coworker, as I said earlier. Behave like someone you would want to work with. Have intelligent questions prepared to ask the interviewer. Having done your research about the employer in advance, ask questions which you did not find answers in your research to. Evaluate the interviewer and the organization she or he presents. An interview is a two-way street. You have all rights to have your opinion. Conduct yourself cordially and respectfully while thinking critically about the way you are treated and the values or priorities of the organization. And if you believe that you were treated not in the right way, inappropriately, or asked questions that made you feel uncomfortable, discuss this with a career service advisor or the director. Make sure you understand the employer's next step in the hiring process. Know when you need to talk with someone else or what are the next steps you have to take, if there are any. When the interviewer says that the interview is over, offer a firm handshake. Look charming, look confident, stand up, and leave. And after the interview, it is always a nice gesture to write them an email or a message, like a thank you letter. It's always a nice gesture. And immediately after the interview, mark notes right away so you don't forget the critical details and you can remember everything, because your schedule probably is busy as all of us are. All of our is. So let's move on to interview do nots. Don't make excuses. Take responsibility for your decisions and actions. And don't be late. Believe me, no one cares why it happened. And if it did the first time, your employer might think that it's a habit, that you like being stuck in traffic every day and that it's going to become your daily hobby or something. So just be sure you're not going to be late and leave as early as possible if you have a suspicion that you might get stuck in traffic. Don't make negative comments about previous employers or professors or any other exes, so to say, because it is an indicator that you can talk like that about them in the future too, and no one wants that. No one wants to ruin their reputation, especially if it's a highly respected company. Don't falsify application materials or answers to interview questions. Don't treat the interview casually as you're just shopping around or doing the interview for practice. This is a really big insult to the interviewer and to the organization itself. It's highly disrespectful because in this case, they would be wasting time, or you would be wasting their time for your own entertainment without any specific purpose. Don't give the impression that you are only interested in an organization because of its geographical location or salary. Don't ask about salary and benefit issues until the subject is brought up by your interviewer. And believe me, it will be, because it's a topic that is, it's just a topic you must talk about in an interview. So just wait and be patient and you'll hear your answers. Don't ask as though you would take any job interview. Don't act as you're desperate for employment. No one wants another depressed and impassionate about his or her job coworker. We all have enough of those on every corner. So don't make the interviewer guess what type of work you're interested in. It is not the interviewer's job to act as a career advisor to you. Don't be unprepared for typical interview questions. You may not be asked all of them, or may not be asked any of them probably, but being unprepared will not help you in any way. So just read them before going. A job search can be hard work and involve frustrations, but don't exhibit frustration or a negative attitude to the interviewer ever. I know it's hard. Don't go to extremes with your posture. As I said, always sit still, look confident, sit up straight, keep eye contact. Don't assume that a female interviewer is a miss or a missus. Address her as a miss unless told otherwise. If she has a PhD degree or other doctoral degree or medical degree, use doctor and last name, just as you would with a male interviewer. Marital status of anyone, male or female, is, however, irrelevant to the purpose of the interview, so it's not a big deal. Don't chew gum or smell like smoke. It's disgusting. That applies to everyone, and chewing gum, okay, smoking is disgusting, but chewing gum might be considered as rudeness. Don't allow your phone cell to sound during the interview. Switch the sound off, and if you forget to do that and you have a call, just drop it. Don't ever take it, and don't even text message it back. You're gonna do that after the interview. It's not gonna take that long. don't take your parents, your pet, an assistant animal is not a pet in this case, spouse, fiance, friends, or enemies to an interview. People actually do that. If you're not grown enough and independent enough to attend an interview alone, you're insufficiently grown up and independent for a job too. So you can always share about your success with your relatives after your interview. You don't have to bring them together. So to an interview, never bring gum or candy, coffee, soda, or water. Your phone should be switched off. Don't bring your iPod. Don't have a hat or a cap on. And so on. I hope this was helpful, and we're running out of time. So I'm going to meet you guys next Tuesday, same time, same place. Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu from noon to 1. I hope you had a good time, and I wish you a good week.